Hello, everyone. This is Birgit from ExpertWomen.com. With me today, I have Elizabeth. We are going to introduce you to a wonderful guest who's a really inspirational woman. She's an entrepreneur. She's a woman who has overcome many personal obstacles. She became an overnight mom. She has had debt issues and weight issues. And we're going to share with you today the story of how she overcame all of these things. So right now, I'd like to introduce you to Carrie Wilkerson. Carrie,
hi.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is great. I'm looking so forward to talking to you. You have such a wonderful transformational story. Can you tell us about it and how it came to be?
Absolutely. Anytime I can offer anybody hope, I'll just tell you, I was a complete mess, an absolute mess. The year was, I remember it was January of 2002, because that's the year that I was turning 30. And in my New Year's journal, which I have since thrown away because it was such a negative journal, I didn't feel like I needed to own that anymore.
Really?
But I was at a very low point. And anybody that really knows me knows that I'm very high energy. I'm very enthusiastic. Well, you know, I mean, Birgit, we've met
definitely
in person.
Definitely, you are. When you walk into a room, you light up the room.
Thank you.
Your face shines. And you're just, everybody wants to be around you. You just have that energy, and it's just beautiful.
Thank you. Well, that year, I wasn't feeling that. I was at a point, I was 110 pounds heavier than I am right this minute. No, I'm still not at my goal weight, but I was 110 pounds heavier than I am right now. I had just resigned a position as an independent contractor with a direct sales company, which I had done fairly well, but I had mismanaged my funds, and I had gotten our personal finances kind of in a mess, really without my husband even knowing. Not that I was hiding anything, but I was just being very inattentive. If I had been working for a company, I would have been in jail for embezzlement. You know, I was selling product, you know, which was mine. I was selling product, but then instead of reinvesting it or putting it where it went, you know, it just became disposable income. And so I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't managing our funds well. And I got us into over $100,000 worth of debt before I even realized it. Now, some people are going, no, that's just not possible that you could do that. It's absolutely possible. When you had, that was the time period where you could get a credit card, you know, for zero interest, for this, for that, for whatever. You just fill out the things when they come. So I was using one to pay the other, and I was juggling, and I was back and forth, and I wasn't even keeping track of who I owed what. And so I was just paying things as they came, sometimes late, but always paying, you know,
mm-hmm.
But sometimes with each other. So by the time I took the statements, I sat down and I did a spreadsheet, I thought probably I was in between $40,000 and $50,000 worth of debt. Now, let me back up and say, I'm not a shopper. I don't spend a lot of money on clothes for me or the kids. I'm very much a Walmart and a Target kind of girl. We probably took a couple of vacations a year, so that adds up. But really, we weren't driving fancy cars. You know, that was just eating out here and there. It was not being lavish. Like people think, oh, she must have been spending a fortune. You know what? I wasn't spending a fortune, but the little things absolutely add up into a fortune. And then when you tack on late fees and interest
mm-hmm.
and penalties and then convenience fees for switching from one to the other, it adds up. I bet, you know, Liz and Birgit, I bet that if I were to look back at all those numbers, I bet that probably 15,000 of that was fees and interest and penalties. I bet. I mean,
that's unbelievable.
Well, you know, I'm just guessing, but if I had to, I mean, if you look at it, that would be about, you know, a little over 10%. And a couple of my cards, I remember when I finally went to my husband and I said, I'm in trouble, and I've gotten us in a mess. Here's the irony, okay? I hope y'all are sitting down. the irony is that my husband is a financial planner.
That happens so often. I have a story in our book, too, about my husband being an accountant and
mm-hmm.
how he was running out paying our visa bills before midnight, and it took a while, too, before I clued in and discovered what was going on.
Right, and so he was a financial planner, and I was supposedly doing well in this business, and I was. I was just mismanaging the funds after the fact. I had two preschoolers at home. We adopted two children as toddlers, and by now they were two preschoolers, and dealing with the overweight and not just in a great space myself. Anyway, it was a dark time, so I finally had to go to my husband. Once we sorted it all out, it was over $100,000 in debt, not counting our home, not counting any mortgage. That was all unsecured debt. And some of the credit cards, because of late fees, you know, they had started out at 0%, but because of late fees or penalties or whatever, had now reverted to like 21 and 25%. And because I wasn't paying attention, I had 25% on some of those cards. And I promise you that there are people on the call, as shocking as it seems, there are people on this call that don't know what percentage of interest they're paying, and they don't even know that they're paying more in interest than they're paying in principal. And you will never, never, never get out of debt that way if you don't put a cease to, you know, the activities and what's going on right now. Mm-hmm. So I did have to reveal to my husband what was going on, because at this point I was just, you know, I don't want to say suicidal. I don't think I would ever hurt myself, but because I'm a chicken. but I was at a really dark, low point. And for somebody with pretty good confidence and a good skill set and a great loving family, I was not feeling worth taking up space. I was feeling very, very low. And, you know, weight can do that to you, but also debt is one of the most crushing experiences, because then you're just beating yourself up about every expense, about every mismanagement. So that was a hard thing. And I tell people, you know, you're in a lot of debt when you have to tell your husband about it $30,000 at a time. Because I didn't tell him all at the same time. I broke it to him about $30,000 at a time, because then, you know, once he got over that initial 30 and it seemed so hopeless, then the other 30s didn't matter so much. So
what made you start to tell him? Was it just your sense of feeling low and or just realizing, or was there like one night you just broke apart?
Well, you know, I hadn't been keeping up, and when I thought, oh, I probably am $40,000-$50,000 in debt, and I could, you know, as long as it's like just 1 year, I feel like I could just devote my whole salary like 1 year to this. I feel like $50,000 I could probably knock out in a year, year and a half. Now, that's not realistic either when you have living expenses, but that's what I was thinking. I thought, well, then I can manage that, and then I don't have to tell him necessarily. But then when I sat down and did a spreadsheet on my computer and looked at all my interest and all my payments and all my everything and saw that it was over $100,000, I knew that I needed his help. I knew that I absolutely could not do that, that I was going to have to get a job or come up with some significant income. There's no way we could absorb that into our budget, because the minimum payments even were astronomical. And so I just knew I needed his help. And let me say, we have an amazing marriage. I mean, we're still married.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we have been married 16 years. We've been together for 18 years. And, you know, I think probably that might have been even a harder thing on our marriage than any other kind of infidelity, just because of the nature of his business and the fact that he felt like I didn't trust him to help with all that. I wanted to be independent with my business money. I wanted to handle it. I wanted to do it. I wanted to prove that I could. And so he had some hurt in there. It wasn't even necessarily so much the, oh my gosh, now we have to get out of this. It was more the, why didn't you come to me before? Why, we could have been doing this together. We're a team. We always do things as a team. You don't have to be feeling this way by yourself. So I always tell people, you know, really, Don't try to climb out of that pit by yourself. It does take a team, because you have to be on the same page about spending, about investing, about paying your bills. If the number one factor of fighting in a marriage is money, then alleviate as much of that as you can by discussing calmly before things get out of control. So we did not declare bankruptcy. We did not get a consolidation loan. We couldn't qualify for one because our credit was so bad at this point. Which is a hard thing. We have always really prided ourselves on great, great credit. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
Were you the
right,
one responsible for the household expenses?
Primarily, yeah, because he was traveling.
So your husband wasn't paying the bills and things like that. That was kind of, that role fell onto you, or because you wanted to.
He was handling like mortgage and, you know, electricity and the the main stuff, but incidentals and, you know, my obviously my business credit cards. And so what I had started doing was getting cards in my name and in my business because I could do that independently.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then doing things like, you know, school supplies, school clothes, mm-hmm. You know, vacations, those kind of things. And I would say, you know, oh, I'll pay for that out of, you know, my company money. And I would some, but, you know, I wasn't, because I was embezzling from the company, and I wasn't making as much as I probably could have also been making at that point. So there were a lot of factors responsible, and I cannot blame anyone but myself. And it wasn't that he was being inattentive at all. It was that those were my business cards, and I was responsible for all that because that was my choice. That's what I wanted. But I was being inattentive. I was choosing, like, I wouldn't open my statements for weeks, you know, and I wouldn't, because I was just being reactive. I was just not taking care of business. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So those were some of the attitudes that got you into trouble then.
Right, and I hate math, and I hate numbers, and I'd just rather not deal with them. And if you look at my debt problem, a lot of the same issues had to do with my weight problem because I really resent having to watch every bite that goes into my mouth or count or measure or weigh or whatever. And so I just tend to ignore it and just be passive about it, which then you have a compounding problem. So the number one advice I give people, if you know you're having financial issues, is you have to first be aware. You have to be totally aware of where you are. You have to get very real with your money. What is your bank account balance? What is your actual income? What are your actual expenses? And how much do you owe other people, period? And then there are some great, I'm sure you share all these resources, but there are some great debt calculators. If you go in and do the debt calculator, you will see that it's going to take you like 15 years at the current amount you're paying.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take you 15 years to pay off that nice vacation you just wanted to take. So I think being aware is the woman's first challenge. A lot of us had moms that the husbands took care of them as far as, oh, they took care of all the bills. Or even my mom now, who's over 60, I don't think she knows even where the life insurance paperwork is or the bank account number or any of those kind of things because my dad handles all that.
Mm-hmm. That's so dangerous. Liz and I have had several women clients who their husbands pass away and they don't know anything. And then on top of the grief they're feeling, they have to deal with their money. And it's just such a tragedy for them. And it could be so avoided if they would just pay even a little bit of attention throughout time or on a monthly basis, even if they don't like it. And it's like a woman gives up all of her power to mm-hmm. a guy, and maybe because they say they don't like numbers, don't want to do it. But then there are such terrible consequences to pay later on when some tragedy does happen in their lives.
Right. Well, now we're totally out of debt. Now we have four children now. We've added two more. We have four children, and all of their college funds are completely funded. We have a savings cushion. We are funding our retirements at maximum capacity. We have a real estate portfolio. We're in a very different money place right now, just 6 years later, which is incredible, actually, 6 years later. And here's how it works now. He works at home full-time with me for our businesses. And he's our CFO, so he handles all the money, he does all the bills and all those things, but we have a staff meeting and we work with a finance coach once a month where we have all the raw numbers, and as much as I hate it, and even now, like half an hour before the meeting, I always start the, you know what, I really am so busy this month, I really don't want to see all those numbers, I still have that, I still deal with that, and I know it's in such a good place, I think. Well, I don't even need to see that. They're taking such good care of me. I don't need to know. I don't need, but I make myself attend. I make myself listen. I make myself be aware. He has documented where everything is, what I need to know about this, what steps are here, what he pays this from that, how the LLCs are set up. So yes, he still is. So now he is in primary control of that, which is actually better than me being hands-on with it. I've delegated it, so I don't want women to think they can't delegate it. But even if you delegate it, you have to be knowledgeable and educated and aware. mm-hmm. of what is going on. You cannot just look at all the celebrities that we hear about. Susan Powder is a good example. They make a phenomenal amount of money in a short period of time, and then because they've turned all of their power over to their advisors, within 6 months they're bankrupt. Even though they've just generated $10 million, they don't have any money and they don't know where it all went.
They're just not involved, and that's what you need to be.
Right, absolutely. And so you have to be involved and aware, and there has to be a measure of accountability for those people too. So for us, part of the issue with me turning it over to him and him really getting a grip on it so then we could do that together. And then I became a student of money. You know, a lot of us have never been taught money management in school. I will say that my kids have some phenomenal math teachers who are teaching them checkbook management and budgetary spending and comparing car prices and those kind of things in sixth grade, which I think is very progressive.
But
we never had any of that. We never had any of that, and most of our parents were paycheck to paycheck to paycheck, if they even made it from paycheck to paycheck. And so then we go to college, and the first thing in our post office box at college is a credit card application, because now we're 18 and we've registered for whatever we've registered so that they know we're 18 to vote probably. And then all of a sudden we start that spiral and nobody's taught us how to manage it. And plastic is free money and we never see it. And so money is not, doesn't have a value. I mean, if you really think about it, money doesn't have a value to us anymore. It's on plastic. It's on paper. We're payment to payment. You know, when you go car shopping, for instance, you don't look at the total price of the car. You look at the monthly payment, right?
Right.
You don't
avoid any interest costs that would be incurring over that time and how many years longer the interest will add up to and take
to
pay off.
Right. And so, and now they're doing 7-year car notes and 40-year home loans. And, you know, we weren't paying stuff off before. Now how are we going to pay off stuff 40 years and 7 years? I mean, it's just crazy. You know, I became a student. I started studying some Orman and Ramsey and Kumada and all those really great teachers. But again, nobody really discussed the emotions tied to it. And I love that you guys are going to be addressing all that. And so I'm rambling, and you just asked for a brief overview of my story. But so that's it. Basically, in 6 years, we went from the big mess to now we're in a very different place. You know, this year we put an in-ground pool in the backyard, and we paid cash for it, which was such a blessing. Everybody said, oh, did you get a good deal on your pool? You know, are you doing payments? Are you, you know what? We didn't want to do it until we could pay cash for it. And so, because a pool is really kind of a depreciating investment anyway, and if you're paying escalating interest on a depreciating investment, then you never get ahead. So with us, it was important to be able to do that. And just different things. We don't live, yes, the pool was a big deal, but we don't live luxuriously. We don't live like in a brand new home. We still don't do big shopping. Now, I did just do the New York makeover thing, which was a lot of fun, but for me that was really hard to shop at Bloomingdale's. That was really hard for me to do that because I am now such a money student that I kept really struggling with that. Now, sometimes, like in nice clothes, you get what you pay for. You know, but like the costume jewelry and the handbags and those kind of things, absolutely, I drew the line. I was not going to buy costume jewelry from Bloomingdale's. What I did is and I probably shouldn't even divulge this, but I took pictures of what I liked. And then the next day I went to Chinatown.
Found some there.
And, well, I knew there were some really great jewelry places in Chinatown. So I took pictures of what I liked hanging on the outfits that I liked, you know, so I would know the length and all that. And then the next day I took cash. I had a budget, and I took cash, and for what one of those pieces would have cost me at Bloomingdale's, I bought everything on my list in Chinatown for cash.
That's fantastic, and don't you feel so proud when you get a good deal like that?
I was,
and you look after
and my
your
husband,
money so well?
Exactly, and my husband was with me, and he was just so tickled. He was just laughing. He said, you know, that's really smart. He said, a few years ago, you would have thought, oh, I need to get it now, or I'm not going to be able to get it. I'm not going to be able to find it. He said, but I'm really proud. And like the big bags and the big purses, I don't care if it has a name brand on it. I really don't care. My favorite big bag, it looks like something that Miley Cyrus or, you know, one of the High School Musical girls would carry, one of those big obnoxious bags. I got it at Walmart for $10. It's a black leather bag with the same cargo look that they have. And to me, it's a purse. A purse is a purse like a car is a car. It gets you from here to there and it serves a purpose. Why would I spend $200 to $300 just so it has a name on it? I don't care about the wow factor. Birgit, it's like you said, I would rather the wow factor when I walk into a room be my smile or my energy than what purse I'm carrying and what shoes I have on, which is a good thing since I never wear shoes.
Because if you had your $300 purse, the energy might not be showing off your body because you're just projecting all of the misery of the bad times.
Right, exactly. So, you know, it's about choices. It's about, you know, and then we can talk about, you know, the way we got out of debt was a lot of lifestyle choices. But, you know, you have to become a student about money, and you have to kind of get over, mindset-wise and emotions-wise, you kind of have to get over stuff making you who you are. That's so important. What I found emotionally that I was doing, this was a big aha for me, and I think this is what you want to know. I found that I was seeking approval with money.
From other people, and that
mm-hmm.
everyone would look at you, oh, Mary has this. And...
Well, not stuff-wise. What I mean is when I looked at my statements and things, what I found is that I was spending more money on other people than I was even on my family. For instance, I sent my parents to Israel. I sent my parents on a cruise to Canada and Alaska. During this time that I was accruing all this debt, I sent them, and those are not cheap vacations.
No, those are beautiful. Your parents must have been in heaven.
they were, and you know what? If they had had any idea that I was in debt, they would never have agreed to go. And I wouldn't trade for those experiences that they had. I absolutely would not. But at the same time, I've always been a pleaser. I've always been the one in the room that wants to make everybody happy and make everybody feel included. And I still am that way to a certain extent. I want everybody to be in the conversation. I want everybody to feel a part and to feel valuable and worthy. And what I saw early on was that because of my weight issues and my image issues and because I'm so distractible and have ADHD and I didn't stick with one thing very long, I thought, well, the way to make people happy is by doing for them and by giving.
So when we come to that realization, because that's a huge turning point.
It was huge. You know, it was absolutely huge. And another thing I saw is that, I think my husband kind of pointed it out, and he was a little scared when he did. But we were going out to dinner with somebody, and I have a hard time letting anybody even pay for their own. It's really, even now, it's really hard for me. I want to be the one that pays for everybody at the table. Because, you know, we've all been in those awkward situations. Oh, do we split the check? Do we, you know what? For me, it's just better to pay for everybody. Then everybody can get whatever they want. Then there's no weirdness. Then nobody feels stuck. Then nobody is saying, oh, what if they get steak and then I only get a salad because that's all we can afford? You know, so for me, I really like to pick up the tab. And I was doing that. I mean, a lot of our bills were because when we would go out, I was always doing that. And I wouldn't even like ask my husband. I would just say, you know, we'll get it. We'll take it. And so we were going to dinner one night, and I think this is when it dawned on me. We were going to dinner one night, and my husband says, this is right after we'd discovered all the debt. He says, we're not paying for everybody. And I said, oh, I really hate that. I really want to. And to me, it wasn't going to be a big deal. We were going to do it. He said, no, we're not. We will pay for ours, and we will order reasonably. And they can pay for theirs. We didn't invite them and say, we're going to pay for everything. They are expecting to pay for their own, and we're going to let them. I will handle it. If you need to get up and go to the restroom during that point, I will handle it. And I said, well, I'm stuttering around because really it's so uncomfortable for me. Even now when we take my parents anywhere, I want to pay. So he says to me, and he looks at me, and, you know, he's pretty, I don't want to say passive, but he's very easygoing and very steady and very opposite of me. He looks at me, he said, Carrie, they will still like you even if you don't pay.
Fantastic. Wow, powerful words.
And I just
hit you like a brick.
Even now, my mouth is dropped open at the fact that he said it, one, and I suddenly remembered every conversation, and I can still get very emotional if I really stop. But I remember every conversation from when I was a kid from my mom saying, Carrie, you're going on this school field trip. Do not spend your money on anybody else but you. This is for you to have a souvenir. Well, invariably, I would come home, and I would have a souvenir for everybody in the house but me. I wouldn't have anything for me because I would have spent it on everybody else. We've taken our family on trips, and I overdue on nieces and nephews and present time and all those kind of things. And then at the same time, and I'm not a good receiver. at the same time, I'll say, oh, y'all don't do Christmas gifts for us this year. Let's just do something fun, or let's just, you know, whatever. So I was giving to seek approval. And that was huge for me. And my husband saw it more than I saw it. But then when we're looking at credit card statements, I'm seeing trips. And yes, you know, I really wanted my parents to experience that. I really did. But at the same time, I was being lavish and actually irresponsible with my money, because I was not in a place to be able to do that for them at that point. I am now. I'm absolutely now, and we still do. We went to Hawaii a couple of years ago. But even then, what I realized, and again, this is my conservative husband, the voice of reason, he says, if we're going to do those kinds of things, people will appreciate it more if they have a stake in it. So we'll cover the hotel and the things while we're there, but they need to know that they're going to cover their meals, and they need to, like, we'll cover their plane tickets, but if they want to bring your brother, then he needs to cover his own, because I have a little brother, he's 20. If they want to bring your brother, then they need to cover his ticket. You know, I mean, just little things like that, so that then my parents are a little responsible too, and it's not me just saying, oh, just show up and I'll spend everything on everybody. And so we've changed the rules a little bit, and we've kind of pulled that back. And I have also since said to my parents, you know, I need to tell you that this is the place I was in when I did that. And for whatever reason, I know you love me, and I know you've been very supportive of me, but for whatever reason, I've been trying to buy unconditional approval. I've been trying to either buy favorite status or buy, you know, compensate for my weight or however you might be disappointed in me. And I apologize for that. And I can't do that anymore because of my family. And I'm sorry that I felt like you didn't love me just for me, you know, and that was a hard conversation for them too. That was really hard for them too. Because one, then they had the guilt of these really great vacations when I was so in debt. But then at the same time, it has changed our relationship in that they are, they weren't raised very demonstrative, either one of my parents. You know, I've really taught my parents how to be affectionate and how to be loving. It wasn't really in their upbringing and things. And so now they're much more verbal about it. They're much more, you know, they'll drop by. We're now in the same town. They'll drop by just to spend 10 minutes here or there. Or my dad will just come by and say, hey, you know, sugar, let me take you to lunch. And stuff like that just wasn't happening before. So yeah, I guess I was maybe paying to be in their space or whatever, but it wasn't just them. I was doing that with people I worked with. I was doing that with people my husband worked with. I wanted to be the biggest giver.
It sounds like as your self-worth improved and you gained more confidence, you, for example, with your parents, you let them know your need, which was, you know, mom and dad, you really don't show me in an outward way that you love me, and I'm kind of trying to buy it. So if you could demonstrate to me more your love, then I would feel better. I mean, you didn't say it that way, but
right.
That's what kind of happened. And as they were able to show you in ways that had meaning to you, you felt better. And by the time you got to that point, you also had improved your how you felt about yourself. Somewhere in there, you were gaining confidence and belief in yourself.
Well, and as I, and I don't mean to imply that I didn't think my parents loved me. I mean, I did, but I still was trying to, maybe insurance, maybe I was buying insurance, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure. But as I, as we started making strides on the debt, and then I started our first successful business, because I don't count that other one, our first successful business, then as I was able to, I don't know, maybe grow into being my own woman and having a measure of success in that area with that business. At the same time, my finances improved, one, because I'm generating this income, two, because my husband is really, you know, we're reining this in, we're really learning some good smart money habits, and then you're right, I'm at that realization of I need to be worthy just because of me. Just because that's what the Creator designed me to be, is worthy. I don't have to buy it. I don't have to earn it. Nothing. I'm worthy just because. Now, the other things are fun, and they help, and they're a fun little scorecard. But at that same time, you're right, I gained a measure of confidence. And people say, oh, that probably happened when you lost all that weight. No, actually, the weight was very, very slow. And it has been half a pound at a time, not even 1 pound at a time, half a pound at a time, at the same time as I'm making these transformations. But it was because then at that point I decide, well, you know what, I'm worth taking care of myself too. And my kids deserve to have me around and deserve to have me on the floor playing with them and deserve to have me in the healthiest shape I need to be. And so, you know, it kind of all worked together, but I wouldn't say there was like just a big switch that flipped. You know, there was no big aha as far as all of it. It was just really kind of one emotion at a time. And it's, you know, I don't know that you ever really get over it. I mean, I still... If we have an influx of money, I still go, oh, you know, what fun thing can we do with that, or how can we, or who can we give, or who can we? And there is absolutely a place for giving. I don't want people to think I've stopped giving. That's not it at all.
But you were giving excessively.
I was giving beyond what made sense. Yeah, I was giving myself into debt, which is stupid. It's just stupid. Now I give proportionally to my income. We give regularly 10% of our gross. Now, a lot of people say, oh, you should do 10% of your revenue after your expenses, after your whatever. Well, for me, that wasn't enough. For me, I didn't want to figure that out because, well, for a couple of reasons. One, I didn't want to then say, okay, back out affiliate commissions, back out taxes, back out this. And then, because then I feel like it's whittling away at how much I get to give. So instead, we take 10% of our gross billing on every business. And then that is my give money. That is my give budget. And I have to tell you, that is just, it's exciting. It's fun. And then at the end of the year, when you do your taxes, it shows you what percentage of your income and what percentage of your bottom line and all that that you give and what percentage of the nation you're in, because who else gives that much? And so that's kind of a little competitive thing. That's really kind of fun. But I still get to give. And now I know I'm not putting my family in peril, because honestly, what good am I doing other people if I'm not even taking care of my own family? As women, we tend to think that, and I hate generalizations, but I will say we tend to think, oh, you know, I'm not going to have anything new. It's more important for the kids to have something new. Or I'm not going to do anything for myself. I'm not going to go get my hair done because it's more important for the kids to have something or the husband to have something. You know, we get into this self-sacrificial thing even when we can afford it. We get into that self-sacrificial. We think we're being so noble and so honorable because we aren't doing anything for ourselves. Well, there's a time and a place for that, too. We have to take care of ourselves or we can't take care of other people. And your money is the same way. You have to take care of your financial business or you can't take care of the people around you. Just like I fly a lot, and on the plane they always say, put your own oxygen mask on first, even before you put on the child or the senior citizens next to you. And that's because if you pass out, you're no good to anybody. So
exactly.
Take care of you first financially, take care of you first physically, take care of you first emotionally and spiritually. And women, we really have a hard time getting that through our thick, stubborn skulls because we're taught to think of everybody else first.
In the book, too, I call it Women Going Wacko, because this goes on for years and years, and then the kids are old enough and independent on their own, and then the woman realizes, you know what? What did I do for these last 15, 20 years for myself? I have nothing that I did, and may feel sorry for herself and just goes out and starts to spend big time, or this is a time, too, when they start to have affairs. They may leave, travel a lot, just really radical behavior they would never have done before because they go overboard. The balance wasn't there throughout their life.
Right. Or they have such a big gap in their spirit, in their life, in their time, that they don't know what to do, and they still won't take care of themselves. And then, you know, the husband and she don't have any kids to focus on, and so now he's looking at her going, where did my wife go? Do your hair, for goodness sakes. And then he starts looking around, you know, because she's not got anybody to take care of. And actually, you know, I won't mention any names, but there's somebody in our extended family that once the kids were gone and all of that, that she has to have an animal all the time. She has to have something dependent on her all the time, because she has to be taking care of something. She refuses to take care of herself. It has to be, it has to be a little something that's dependent on her. So, you know, I don't know when we're sold the lie that we can't take care of ourselves, but we absolutely have to. We absolutely have to, and that is financially and every other way. So, you know, I'm kind of passionate about that now because I thought I was doing a good thing by not paying any attention to all this and by only focusing on my kids, et cetera, and it's just not the case. So.
And it leads to you being so much more happier and a much better person for your kids and everyone around you.
Well, and the role you're setting, the guideline you're setting. My girls, I have three girls and one boy, and my girls think that my New York experience was the most incredible thing. They're so excited. They can't wait until they get older and they can go do something like that. And they love that mommy is so pretty now, and they love, not that I was neglecting myself before, but
you looked great before.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm a little more updated now, but they love that I took those 2 days for just me in New York City, having my hair and my makeup and clothes and the whole nine yards. That's setting a good example for them that, yes, you need to take care of yourself, and you can't pour into the lives of others if your cup is empty.
Mm-hmm. So, Carrie, you've shared a lot of really great things in your personal story that empower women, but if you could just say one thing to the women that are listening to really move them forward and break through all those resistances, could you give us one statement that you'd like everyone to really take away with them?
I think one of the big breakthroughs I had, and everybody's background is different, everybody's history is different, and generationally it all works in, but I think we have this feeling that it's not okay for us to have money. And what I mean is not just okay for us to make it. I know there's a lot of women making great money. It's okay for us to make good money. It's okay for us to spend money. It's okay for us to invest. But you know what? It's okay to keep some. It's okay to save some. It's okay to have a cushion. We tend to think that, oh, if we have this, we need to be doing something with it. We need to be spending it on somebody or having fun with it, or, you know, we shouldn't have this excess because we're taught that excess is not good, you shouldn't have that extra. There's so many people starving in Africa. I mean, how many times did your parents tell you that when you were a kid?
And so even
when I started my business, I told my mom one of my goals was to have a part-time nanny to help with the kids, not to raise my kids, to help with the kids during the day so that I could work during the day instead of just working all through the night and then being too exhausted to deal with them during the day, and have a housekeeper. I really don't enjoy domestic things. I don't enjoy housekeeping or laundry or any of those things. I don't like it. I would rather be doing puzzles with the kids or swimming with them or something fun, pushing them on the swing. And I said to my mother, I would love at some point in my business, one of my goals is to not have a fancy house or a fancy car, but I would love to have like an Alice from the Brady Bunch. You know,
Alice
from the Brady Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the show, the Brady Bunch?
Yes.
It's an old show. Okay, Alice, the housekeeper, she drove the kids around sometimes. She was part of the family, but she was also extra hands for them. And so I said to my mom, that's one of my goals. And you know what she said to me? And now this is huge. You guys need to really tune in to what people around you are saying. She said, Carrie, that's not for people like us. That's a whole different kind of person that has staff.
Yeah,
and I just...
those are the beliefs people grow up with, and then
uh-huh.
they send it down generation after
right.
generation.
Right. And I said, Mom, you love to do the domestic things around your house. You can't imagine having anyone in your house doing those kind of things. You also can't imagine having an extra $10 at the end of the week. But I'm telling you, if I had somebody like that to help me, I could generate an extra $1,000 a week with the time it freed up. You need to quit thinking that people with excess money are bad. That's one of those things. We think that excess is wrong. We think that excess is bad, you know, is... frivolous, that's the word. We
mm-hmm.
think it's frivolous, and it's not. It's security. It's also the ability that if you find somebody that has a huge need, then without going to get a cash advance on your credit card, you can say, I would really love to help that person. And you know what? I even want to do it anonymously. I'm just going to slip $300 into the mail, or I'm going to, you know, get that to them without them knowing. And it's so much more of a relaxed place. So I guess, Liz, maybe the big aha, the big turning point was that we're so conditioned to thinking if we just had enough, you know, we're so scarcity-minded. If we just had enough to pay the bills, if we just had enough to breathe, then that's enough. Then we should be satisfied with enough. I maintain that we need more of an abundance mentality, that enough is not enough.
Exactly.
That really a little bit of excess is just a good start.
And I guess what's tied into that is really the feeling of deserving.
Right. Absolutely. We don't think we deserve that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. That's exactly. You deserve to have enough. You deserve to have a cushion. And you guys know from your research and from just life experience that once women hit late 40s and early 50s, we really hit this, what I call the bag lady cat food syndrome, where all of a sudden we start panicking. What happens if my husband dies? What happens if my job goes away? What happens? Oh, my gosh, yeah. Do I really have enough? Do I have enough? Do I have enough? So I maintain that right now in our 20s and our 30s and our early 40s, guys, enough is not enough. Enough is not enough. Don't use the Social Security planner. Don't use your minimum retirement planner. More than enough is just about right. You need to have some surplus. You need to have some excess. And so, yes, you know, we make a really phenomenal income right now. Yes, we have money in savings. And I still drive an 11-year-old Suburban. My car has over 200,000 miles on it, but it fits us. It gets us from A to B. It's not falling down or anything, but, I mean, it's an 11-year-old vehicle. You know, I don't have a payment on it. I have to do a repair maybe every 4 or 5 months. It's still cheaper than a repair. I get to carry a lower insurance on it. You know, we don't live extravagantly because we would rather, one, give extravagantly. We would rather know that if there's an extravagant vacation or an extravagant experience or a mission opportunity that we can say yes to that without having to put the brakes on. You know, so yes, we put a pool in, but we also shop with coupons. You know what I mean? We're kind of a paradox, but at the same time, it's all about your daily choices. And I would maintain, Liz and Birgit, I would maintain it's not even daily choices. It's hourly choices. It's the choices when you're at the grocery store. It's the choices when you're at Starbucks, which I love Starbucks. I'm not going to tell anybody to give up their daily latte. But at the same time, when I said to myself, I'm going to change this to a once-a-week treat, and I'm going to buy sugar-free French vanilla creamer for home and really see how much money I'm saving, I was really kind of excited about the $25 a week that I was saving, and then I was empowered to put that $25 a week towards something else. You know, I just had
That's where it adds up always.
Oh, absolutely. And so I'm not going to tell anybody you're going to get rich by giving up your latte. If you really need your latte and function better with your latte, great. But give up something else, but scrimp somewhere else. I just spent, you know, we've alluded to this, but I just spent 2 days in New York City. I spent several thousand dollars on this experience. I'll just go ahead and admit that. And then I went to Bloomingdale's with a personal shopper, and we did a wardrobe overhaul. Now, I didn't go nuts. I had a list of what I wanted. I wanted 2 stage outfits because I do a lot of public speaking, and I wanted some casual travel outfits, and I wanted, like, some seminar outfits. I mean, you know, Birgit, it's how you dress a little differently there. You're not, like, in a suit, but you're not, you know, in jeans and a T-shirt either. Mm-hmm. So I had, you know, so I was able to shop. Now, this was kind of fun. I didn't look at price tags except on a couple of things. The couple of things I looked at were things that were fun things, but not necessarily things I would wear a lot. And so to me, I had to weigh whether that price tag was worthy of that item. But like on the shoes that I found that were just phenomenal and a good fit and comfortable and really looked amazing on my leg, I didn't even look at the price tag. And it's because I had set aside this money for several months of other little projects I was doing. I had scrimped in other areas, and I hate that word even scrimp, but I'd been careful in other areas. We have very conservative cell phone plans. We have very conservative eating out, you know, those kind of things, so that I had zero guilt about this experience. I spent a good wad of money. Yes, I could have spent that on something else, but you know what? Investing in me, investing in my stage career, investing in my business is an important thing. Also, this stylist was able to tell me what works on my body, what doesn't work on my body, what is professional, what is trendy, what to avoid, those kind of things. And that was priceless. I mean, that was really valuable. At the same time, I hired a videographer to get all of it on tape, my whole hair, makeup, shopping, everything. We have it on video because I'm going to turn it into an information product for my website and also as a motivational piece for women about taking care of themselves and those kind of things.
That is really great.
That's really great.
I've gone through the similar experience than you did with the makeover, and at the time it was really hard for me because I didn't think I really deserved to have an experience like that, but it just so boosted my confidence that I told a lot of other women in my circle, and then they went on and followed. But this was months afterward. I didn't mention to them that I went through it at the time because my appearance didn't change drastically, but there was something about my energy level that they noticed.
Right, right.
Completely different. And they said, I want some of that. And I thought, well, what are they talking about? So it's really great that, you know, you've gone through that yourself. I can really, you know, I just feel so good listening to your story because I've gone through those similar emotions, and I've seen other women go through them, and it's just so heart-lifting just to hear that. So you can't wait to see your video.
Yeah, well, we're working with the editor on that now. But then the other thing that was, because I'm a money student, is that hiring the videographer, yes, maybe was a little extravagant. Now, this is kind of funny. I told people, if you want people to wonder what you're up to or think you're important, hire somebody with a big camera to follow you around New York City. I really had people thinking, oh, she must be famous. Ooh, who's she?
She's a movie star.
And so yeah. I walked. Y'all will appreciate this. I walked differently. I carried myself. It was really funny. But then because I'm turning it into a product, because I shot this for my audience, I turned this whole experience into what? A business deduction.
Exactly. Good. Perfect.
See, and so I was going anyway for a date with my husband. I scheduled the business appointment. I worked in the makeover all at the same time. I'm turning it into a product. I will make several times back over what I spent. Plus, I got the education and the energy lift at the same time. And the kids, when I came home, the kids, like, couldn't even wait for me to get in the door. Mommy, 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 let me see. And so to model that for my girls was very important. To model that for my son, that your woman should take care of herself. And then my husband, oh, my gosh, he's just swaggering like John Wayne. I mean, he's just so proud. He's just funny. And then today, my clothes are supposed to come today. They're being shipped. And so I get them today.
Great.
And I leave tomorrow for a mastermind group with probably 22 men and 5 women. And so do you think I'll carry myself a little differently? do you think I'll feel a little more confident, a little more just edgy, I guess, is probably, you know, style-wise, I'll just be a little edgy. But you know, what my point with all that was I didn't have to sweat that investment. Not that I don't, not that I'm not careful about what I spend, I am, but I didn't have to begrudge myself or I didn't have to feel guilty about it or I didn't have to, in Bloomies, I didn't have to say, oh, well, I really like these shoes best, but I'm going to pick these other shoes because they're $50 less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was able to give myself the freedom of that experience because of other choices that I'm making in other areas. You know, if you decide to drive a Hummer and you want to lease it, I don't think that's a very good choice, but you know, if you're compensating in other areas and that's what's really important to you, it's just a matter of give and take. I would maintain that if you're dealing with debt and money issues, you have to have some sacrifice. You cannot have it all. You cannot have the appearance of having it all. You're going to have to suck up your pride a little and give a little and really cut back in some areas.
Carrie, how did you end up making the money? We haven't spent too much time on that. That would be very interesting. Did you sit down, make a plan? How did you just decide that you were going to make more and actually believe that that was possible?
That didn't all come at the same time, the belief and all that. I decided I probably had to get a job, which I had been staying home with the kids. And I sent out about 100 resumes. Now, this is going to be the nutshell version of how the Barefoot Executive was born, which is my company, the Barefoot Executive. I sent out probably 100 resumes, and it was a good job market, and I had a good resume, and I couldn't get an interview. I couldn't get a job. And my husband said, this is totally a God thing. God does not intend you to work outside of the house. The kids need you here. Do something from home. So long story short, we started a little publishing company. My goal was just to make $3,500 a month. And that's as big as I could think. I had been a school teacher, so that's as big as I could think. My parents are in the ministry. My husband's parents are in the ministry. You know, we didn't have big goals. We just thought $3,500 a month, we could make the minimum payments plus a little more and get out of debt eventually. This business, I started studying business strategies and money strategies. This business grew and grew and grew. And I will tell people, now, this is controversial, but I'll tell people, I don't know that you can get out of debt easily when you're working a job because you have no control over your income. You either need to supplement it with a business on your own or be a full-time business. I mean, there's just, you cannot control your income when you're in a job. It's so restrictive. And so if you are in a job and a job only with a restricted salary, then you have to make a lot more lifestyle changes even, I believe.
So you're really advocating entrepreneurism as a form of financial
as a step
freedom.
Right. I'm not saying quit your job and go start a business if you're in debt. That's not, you know, I don't advocate that at all. But I'm saying if you want to increase your income quickly, the best way to do that is some sort of additional income working at home or some sort of business plan at home. And now, we don't even have time to go into all those right now, but that's what I do now is I coach women and mentor women and offer solutions for working at home. I'm not recruiting you into an opportunity. I'm just saying there are a lot of things you can do to earn extra income at home.
Carrie, did you have to educate yourself and get more skills to be able to do that? Did you get a mentor?
I did have a mentor. My first business was a publishing business. My degree is in journalism, so I had a little bit of background in that. But a woman that I knew provided the same service. I called her. I was very open with her, and she mentored me. We were even in the same niche. We still communicate. We've never met in person, but she mentored me for a good 3 months, and we have a really great relationship. I knew that I couldn't figure that out on my own. I could, but it would have taken a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And so I started on a shoestring. I did not do anything crazy. I didn't go into a lot of debt for business. I started something with my existing skill set. Did I start something I was passionate about? No. I needed to pay the bills. I was not passionate about newsletters. I was not passionate about publishing, but it was my skill set. I had a computer. It's what I knew. It was in a niche I knew. Then, while the stress was going away because we're paying the bills now, we're handling these things. I'm staying home. Now, I'm working like crazy. I'm working through the night. The business is growing like mad, and that was a fun, really energetic, exhausting time. But while I was doing that and knowing that I was going to burn out on newsletters, I started researching some other things that I could do that I was passionate about. But I will never be one of those people, and you guys may disagree with me on this, I will never be one of those people that says, do what you love and the money will follow. It's absolutely not always the case. You know, you can love baking cookies all day long, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to fund your wealth.
It has to be logical and practical and be
right.
Add a lot of value to other people.
Right. And so my first thing I tell people is first look at your existing skill set. Look at your existing inventory of computer, of equipment, of whatever. Maybe yours is home daycare. Maybe yours, you know, whatever it is, something that you don't have to have a big investment for, something you can do in addition to what you're already doing to grow slowly. And then when you have a financial measure of freedom, then you can pursue your passions. But you cannot necessarily, when you're in a position of financial constraint, strapped, suffocating because of debt, you absolutely cannot just say, oh, I'm going to pursue my passions and the money will follow. You will end up putting your family in even more debt, in even more peril. And then you will be one of those people discouraging other people because you'll say, working for yourself just doesn't work. It doesn't work. I couldn't make any money and I failed. And that's just not the case. So I did newsletters. I was not passionate about it. That business is now 6 or 7 years old, and I am so burned out on that stuff that I have hired somebody to replace me, and my husband and this woman run the company so that that frees me to pursue what I am passionate about. And what I am passionate about is educating, entertaining, empowering women about working at home, having financial freedom, and pursuing some different options for their family as the Barefoot Executives. But I couldn't have necessarily started at the Barefoot Executive. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a perfect logical way to get to where you want to go. You first held out a vision somewhat. You knew this what you needed to get out of debt, so you created something practical to get yourself going there, and then you started to look at, okay, what can I do to be really happy every day that I just love to do? Wanted to ask you about the Barefoot Executive some more. What do you do there? If some of the people on our call would like to contact you or get in touch with you, and I mean, it sounds really interesting. Tell us some more about the Barefoot Executive and what you do there.
Well, I am the Barefoot Executive. That's what my husband named me when I was pregnant with our third child. I was working at home. We had a really great loft apartment and two little ones in school. And I was pregnant for the first time, actually, because my older two are adopted. And I remember I was just really big and pregnant. I had on these yoga pants and a really fitted shirt and just barefoot padding around, happier than I had ever been in my life, because I was at such a turning point from where I had been 2 years before. Financially, we were making great strides on our debt. My husband was working at home with me full-time. He was not traveling corporately anymore. We were spending so much time with our kids. We were growing business. We were mentoring women. And I come down the stairs one day, and I'm just, you know, pregnant and glowing and totally casual and never wear shoes. And he says, look at you, just all barefoot and pregnant. He said, you are the Barefoot Executive. You're a CEO of this really amazing six-figure company, and you do it all without shoes. He said, you've got to tell women how you're doing what you're doing. You've
fantastic.
Got to tell, he said, you've got to let women know it's possible, that they don't have to drop their kids off at 6 in the morning and pick them up at 6 at night and miss all day long with them. You've got to tell them. So as a result of that publishing company, people just started calling me and emailing me and asking, what are you doing and how are you doing it? And so I started mentoring people, and he just kind of nicknamed me the Barefoot Executive. And so we started a book by, you know, about that. Well, then last year we decided, you know what, we need to take this globally. There is such a need. Even the women that are working at home are feeling very isolated and disconnected and unsuccessful. So we have a membership site. It's at barefoot-executive.com. But you know what? I recommend that everybody first go see our movie. It's 3 minutes. And it really kind of shows you our heart and shows you where we are. If you go to the web address, www.thebossmovie.com, thebossmovie.com, and share that with a friend, that will kind of show you why we do what we do, the choices that we want to make and all those things.
Okay.
That's kind of what we do.
That movie,
the Boss movie, isn't it fun?
So inspiring. I just love watching it. Sometimes if I don't feel great at night, I just put it on, and, oh, it makes me feel so good. You
thank
did a wonderful job on it.
Thank you. We produced that, and it's really, we are hoping that we're showing women what we're about, that we are all about educating, inspiring, and empowering. So that's a little bit about the Barefoot Executive. And so I travel and teach and speak and connect people with business opportunities. I don't recruit people into pyramid things. I just show them what's out there, whether it's real estate or virtual assistant or, you know, taking their current skill set and turning it into something, or even internet marketing. There's so many things that we can do from home, so many things. We shouldn't limit ourselves. We shouldn't say, what kind of job can I have at home? But, you know, how can I create something from home to, you know, because the truth is, you go into your boss and say, you know what, I need to increase my income by $300 a month right away. What's your boss going to say?
Next
yeah.
year.
We'll good luck with that.
We'd see how much inflation is. We might give you a few dollars.
Yeah, we'll give you a 3% raise maybe. But your boss is probably going to say, yeah, if you figure that out, let me know, because I could use an extra $300 a month myself, right?
Okay.
So, there is absolutely no limit to the amount of businesses that you can do from home, where you could generate $300 to $1,000 a month consistently in addition to your job or in place of your job. So that's kind of where we're passionate, and that's what we're working at right now. And being my own boss is what enabled us to get out of the debt that we were in as quickly as we did, and to accelerate our wealth plan as far as paying for the kids' college. 4 kids, and when the baby was 6 weeks old, she's now 14 months, but when she was 6 weeks old, we made the last payment on her college account.
Oh, isn't that a great accomplishment?
and now that I have all these girls, now the plan is wedding CDs. We want to put some money in the money market or in the CD for each of them for their wedding, so that then when they get engaged or get married or whatever, decide to start their life at 22, 25, whatever, we haven't put all the rules on that yet, but they have this CD that has then matured, and they can either do a wedding or a honeymoon or a house down payment or whatever they want to do with that. So,
or you can even buy a house after it accumulates and have an income property.
There you go. And we also
lots
have
of
bought
possibles.
Yeah, we've also bought each of them an income property, and we have formed corporations in their names so that when they're of age, those can either be a business for them or a home for them or income producer for them. So I love, you know, I'm not all about money, money, money. I'm really not. I'm about choices. And so I'm really hoping to set my kids up for some neat choices and empower them and also to educate them about money. So it doesn't have to be a scary thing. It doesn't have to be disempowering. And it doesn't have to be the evil Wall Street thing. I mean, you can deal with money in your sweatpants, and it's okay. You can be as powerful in your sweatpants as you can in a pinstripe. And you can be as powerful with your money as any MBA. You know, don't limit yourself as far as money and emotions. And money is not, it doesn't define you. And so don't let it define you. Don't get your emotions so entangled in it. Think of it as an asset, as a choice builder. And then I think you'll regain some of your power and your esteem in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this has been so inspirational. I know that everybody who listens to this is going to just absolutely get a lot out of it. Liz, do you have any other questions?
I do have one, if you don't mind answering this for us. I mean, it's a great story, and you've given us, I think you've given the listeners great steps that they can apply to themselves. So I think we can all relate to your success story, which just makes it, to me, so meaningful. But can you share with us your greatest success with the Barefoot Executive?
Wow, that's
a tough one.
That's a tough one. Yeah, you know, we're just now about to hit our 1 year anniversary as an official company.
Mm-hmm. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I would have to say that even before we were an official corporation, probably my proudest accomplishments are 5 women that I could name off the top of my head, but I won't for privacy reasons, but 5 women that worked either with my publishing company or were friends of mine that were inspired by our success in that company and now have their own at-home companies and are home with their children where they weren't before. One in particular, her husband is a traveling evangelist, so she's on the road all the time. But before she was not. She was tied to her job. They wanted to have a family, but she was tied to her job, and they didn't want to be apart like that. She has a master's in aeronautical engineering. She has worked for NASA. She is brilliant, but she was tied to her job financially and kind of emotionally, you know. Mm-hmm. She worked with us part-time as a way to pay off some of her student loans, and then took our business model in a different niche with a different direct sales niche and now has staff working with her and is able to travel full-time with her husband and work from the road and raise their son that they have since had since they started that. So
fabulous. Just amazing.
Yeah, and there are story after story after story that I could tell you about that and about people getting out of debt by ramping up their business income. One thing women in business tend to do is say, oh, my business isn't making enough money. I'm going to have to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Instead
we
of
hear
saying,
that so often.
Right. And instead of saying, my business isn't making enough money, I need to look at more efficient, more profitable, more effective ways to work it. I mean, I can't tell you, I can't think of anything that would make me get a job. I can't even think of what circumstance I would have to be in to think that I would set an alarm clock and go work for somebody else and dress according to their standards and drive to their place, leave my kids with somebody. I cannot even think of what circumstance because I am desperate enough, I am hungry enough, I am determined enough that I will find a way and make a way, whether it's creating something to sell, whether it's doing something online, whether it's working for a direct sales company, whatever it would be, I cannot tell you that me saying, hey, we're not making enough, I'm going to have to get a job, or even this, I'll go a step further and say, there is no circumstance that I could dictate that I would even say to my husband, I think you should probably get a job. I mean, we would just figure something out because there are so many choices in being self-employed. There are so many businesses, so many opportunities that the thought of, I mean, it's a mindset. It really is a mindset. The thought of, oh, I'm just going to have to get a job. Oh, my gosh. I can't even, can you tell the anxiety in my chest? Just
I can
saying
hear it,
that.
Hear it.
I can't even think of that. Yeah, it would stress me out. I can't. I have rendered myself completely, absolutely unemployable. I cannot work for anybody else. And even if I found, like, a dream job, whatever that means, if I found a dream job, I cannot think that anybody would give me the headway and the freedom to do what I do within my own business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just can't even fathom it. Not to mention that I like taking a break whenever I want and having baby sugars or going to the park or going to the zoo or going to a field trip to see my kids in a really bad junior high play. You know, I like having the options. I like having the options to do that. So anyway, you know, I think that those are my biggest success stories, Liz, that the fact that I'm as excited for these other women as I am for myself. I know the different place I am right now at 36 than I was the year that I turned 30. It's a freeing place. Debt-free, there's no place like it. I'd rather be debt-free than skinny.
Well,
and I've been working a long time on skinny, and I'd rather be debt-free than skinny. If I had to choose, I'd rather carry around, you know, and that's a powerful statement. I would rather carry around 30 extra pounds than I would carry any amount of commercial debt.
Mm-hmm. Well,
seriously.
You said, you know, Carrie, thank you for sharing that story about the Barefoot Executive, because you said earlier in our talk this morning that, you know, it gives you so much pleasure to give, and that's exactly what you're giving people. The ability to create the freedom that you have created for yourself, for themselves. And so you just continue to give in that way, which is really great.
And I think that what comes through loud and clear why you've become successful is that you just are who you are. You use the gifts that God has given you. You show the world who you are. You freely give of yourself, your heart, and your soul. And that's what it inspires people to work with you and want to be with you. And you have so much to share. And many times we see women who don't take what is within them because they're scared or they don't have the confidence. And that's the only thing that needs to change in people's lives to even get the confidence to go out and do their own business, because they do have skills within them, but perhaps they're not just valuing them now.
Absolutely.
And I just want to say that that's why you're successful, is because you're willing to take that risk to go out and show the world who you are and to just simply be, which is wonderful.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you guys for having me. This has been fun. This has been great.
Yeah.
I hope that it gives somebody some hope.
Well, thank you.
I'm sure it will. And I would like to say goodbye to everybody. Thanks for joining us today. This is Birgit at expertwomen.com signing off.